We're in the middle of a series. The idea that we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks, my wife taught last week, if you were here. She did a phenomenal job. It was super fun to watch. But we've been talking about really this idea of healthy spirituality. Spirituality is one of the vaguest words in the 21st century. It can mean anything at all, from warm, happy, fuzzy thoughts to being scared of an angry God, to trying to empty your mind, to trying to understand the will of God. It could mean anything. And so we want to talk for about 5 weeks about this idea that I'm calling healthy spirituality. And in healthy spirituality, there are five things we're going to focus on that the Bible teaches us to focus on. And each week we're taking one of these. A couple weeks ago we talked about worship, making sure that God is the center of our lives. Last week we talked about discipleship, making sure that we are constantly growing. This week we're going to talk about fellowship, and then we're going to talk about ministry and evangelism in the upcoming weeks as well. So tonight we're talking about fellowship, which is why I have a lawnmower here on stage. Because last summer, halfway through the summer, my lawn had grown to nearly like waist height. I needed to mow my lawn. And so I went out. I've had this lawn mower for a while. So I was, I'm filling it up with gas and all the stuff that you're supposed to do. Put gas in it. My lawn mower for years worked very, very simply. It was very easy. Put gas in it, pull this thing, start it, it goes, I can mow my lawn. I don't have a complicated lawn. I didn't have a complicated lawnmower. I do all the things I normally do. I put gas in it, I hold this down, I pull it, nothing happens. So I check the oil. There's no oil in it. This is probably not a good thing. So I put oil in it. Actually, there was a little bit of oil in it, but I try all of those steps again, nothing happens. So I go on YouTube and ask, what are the most likely things to break in a lawnmower? And the answer is the spark plug. So I look up another YouTube video on how to change the spark plug in a lawnmower. I change the spark plug in the lawnmower, hold this down, pull that, nothing happens. Over the course of 3 or 4 days, I try every simple fix that I can on this particular lawnmower, and none of them work. Eventually, I come to the realization that I can try as many things as I want on this particular lawnmower, and what I in fact needed was a new lawnmower. The lawnmower was done. So I went out, and I got a new lawnmower. And actually, it's funny, I was in the middle of a meeting when I was trying to get this lawnmower, and so I'm constantly trying to do more than one thing at a time. And so I was in the middle of a meeting on the phone while I'm buying the lawnmower at Home Depot, trying to carry the lawnmower and use the little price checker outer thing so that I can subtly check myself out with my lawnmower without the person on the phone figuring out that I'm not just sitting there giving them my full and undivided attention. It didn't really work. I dropped the lawnmower, hurt my toe. It was kind of funny. Not that badly. It was funny, not that painful. But all of that to say, sometimes if you take what you've got and just try to tweak it a little bit, it doesn't work any better. Sometimes you need to almost start from scratch in order to actually get what you want accomplished. In the spiritual life, I think that we find ourselves in a place very often where our underlying deepest assumptions about what it means to have a healthy, good spiritual life are so off that we try and try and try, and we try to add things on top of it, like me trying to put more gas in my broken lawnmower, and it doesn't work. And I keep, and it's very funny. I'm an insecure person about anything mechanical. I don't know a lot. I often assume that the problem is that I don't know a lot. And so I must have tried starting that stupid lawnmower 603 times. And what's amazing, of course, is that it didn't start any better the 300th time, the 400th time, the 500th time, or the 600th time. I just needed to start from scratch. One of the things I love about fellowship in the spiritual life is that it attacks one of the deepest held assumptions that we often have about the spiritual life as Americans. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about what fellowship is really all about and the place it plays in your spiritual life. And I want to tell you, I think fellowship is often one of the most overlooked habits in the spiritual life, because it is one of the easiest habits in the spiritual life until you do it, and then it's really frustrating, but not in a way that makes you feel like, you know how some things, when you do them, they're hard to do, but you feel spiritual about it? Like, you know you're supposed to pray. So even when praying is hard, you get some sort of warm, fuzzy spiritual feeling that makes you want to keep praying, and you're like, all right, this is good. It's a good heart. Fellowship doesn't do that. Fellowship, in its hardest moments, feels the least spiritual. So we're going to talk about that tonight, because I think it is wildly, wildly important. But in order to get there, I want to talk a little bit about what is spirituality all about. What is spirituality all about? When you read the Bible, whether you are starting off reading it or you've been reading it for years and years and years, one of the things that you immediately notice is that the people in the Bible are not from a culture that is much like ours. They're from a culture that is like all about farming and tiny little villages and small towns and like sheep and olives and all these things that are not a primary issue for us on a daily basis, which can trick us into thinking certain things were less commonplace than they really were. Here's what I mean by that. In the Old Testament, in the very beginning of God's story, when he's gathering the group Israel to be his special people, he tells them he wants them to be in the habit of sacrificing animals to him and bringing their crops and sacrificing part of their crops to him. Now, this all sounds very foreign to us. How many of you have actually, like, slaughtered an animal? Like, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 slaughterers. How many of you at any point in your life have slaughtered an animal virtually on a daily basis? 1, 2, 2 out of 50. We are a community of people for whom the idea of animal sacrifice feels very foreign, because the idea of slaughtering an animal feels very foreign. If, however, you spent your everyday life in a butcher shop and God said, hey, what I want you to do for worship is slaughter an animal, it would feel very different. Does that make sense? It would feel much more familiar, because it's the everyday stuff you did all the time anyway. And God would just be asking you to bring those activities that you're used to doing all the time into worship. Same is true, excuse me, the same is true for when they were sacrificing grain and a harvest. This is just bringing everyday common elements of everyday life into the worship experience. So it may be foreign for us, but it's a very commonplace for them. It's really important. Now we're going to jump forward a moment to Jesus' day, and I want to think about some of the things that Jesus did. Jesus worked miracles. That's awesome, right? Like, that feels very out of the norm. Until you think about the ways that Jesus worked miracles. Jesus was in the habit of working miracles by, like, making mud and putting it on a person. Mud may be the most commonplace thing in the entire world. And that's what Jesus uses. Or Jesus would use a simple word. How many of you have used words today? Some of you are lying. Right? This is a very commonplace thing. God, Jesus would just talk and things would happen. Or something as simple as a touch. Jesus would touch somebody and it would be a profound moment. Jesus was constantly all about using commonplace things like touch and mud to do supernatural things. But it starts in these commonplace elements. Same is true for what it was Jesus was doing through some of these miracles. I always love how commonplace Jesus treats his miracles. There's this one moment, one of my favorite miracles of all time, Jesus walks on water. If you read the story really carefully, and some of you have heard me say this before, Jesus walks on water simply because he needs to get over there. He's not trying to be profound. He's not trying to be particularly miraculous. Jesus is just on a walk, and there happens to be water in the way, and he doesn't think about that as really any kind of major barrier. He's just walking. Commonplace. Another time, several times, Jesus works miracles in order to feed people. He works miracles in order to make people's bodies well. This is the stuff of commonplace everyday life. Same is true with his teachings. When Jesus teaches, he uses stories from things like farming and livestock, again, because those things were very common to his listeners. Jesus is making this profound connection between the supernatural and the everyday life. Countless meals Jesus ate with his friends. Countless times we hear of Jesus walking along the way. Jesus is living everyday life, commonplace experiences, and he finds the supernatural. He points to the supernatural in the midst of everyday life, in the midst of real places that you could pinpoint on a map, in the midst of real life experiences that could have been caught on camera if they had camera back then, in the midst of real relationships that have ups and downs, in the midst of the very normal, somewhat boring, not particularly spiritual-seeming everyday life experiences. This is really, really important to grab a hold of. It's incredibly important for one reason, that I think in the 21st century, when we think about the spiritual life, we think of something very, very different. When we think about the spiritual life, we think a lot about how I think, right? What's going on in my head. We think a lot about how we feel. That is, just what's going on in my heart, as if the center of my spiritual life is inside me somewhere. When we think about what does it mean to grow spiritually, we think about this time that we get alone with God, and it's us and God reading our Bible and praying and all of that, and that stuff's important. I talk about it all the time. And when we think about corporate worship, we think about this moment where we all gather together and close our eyes in order to focus on God. We want to shut out the real world in order to give God our full and undivided attention. When we think about prayer, you know what the one biggest concern people have when they talk to me about praying? It is not, boy, prayer takes a long time. In fact, it is, Pastor Joshua, when I pray, I get distracted. Anybody ever said that? Can you raise your hand if you have ever said that? This is because you are trying to put gasoline in the broken lawnmower. We can fix this. Except we can't. Here's what I mean. If the primary thing that matters in your spiritual life is to shut out all the things of the external world in order to have an undistracted moment between you and Jesus, then you are going to have to spend 90% of your energy blocking out all of those thoughts. But if the point of the spiritual life is to engage with God in the stuff of everyday life, in the normal everyday decisions, in the normal everyday relationships, in the normal stuff that's just whatever it is that you think is important, you are never going to feel distracted in the middle of praying. You know why? Because anything that comes into your mind, you'll be like, oh yeah, that's important. I want to talk to Jesus about that. They cease to be distractions. They start to be the content of your prayer life. See the difference? But we're really not talking about prayer tonight. Really, I just want to use that as an example of the fact that we as a people, we as American-ish Christians, have this deep-seated belief that the really spiritual stuff is my personal experience in my head, in my heart, between me and Jesus, so I need to shut the practical world out in order to get to the real deep stuff. And I want to suggest that it appears to me the Bible teaches the exact opposite. In Jesus' day and in the whole Bible story, the deepest spiritual stuff was the commonplace, everyday stuff. For us, it's the special, set-apart stuff. For Jesus, the most significant parts of his spiritual life were the concrete things: doing work, eating meals, walking along a road, connecting with people. For us, it's the abstract stuff. How do I think? How do I feel? For Jesus, it was the social stuff, the stuff that there are far more stories about Jesus when he's with people. That is a giant hint about where the most significant part of our spiritual life really takes place. For us, it's the private. For Jesus, the greatest part of his spiritual life was about engaging. For us, in our instincts, at least for me and my instincts, it's about escaping. For Jesus, it was about the commonplace. For me, it is about the special, the things that make me feel elevated, warm, fuzzy feelings. What does this all have to do with fellowship? Why do I bring up this really important shift that I think we need to make in our spiritual journey in a week when we're talking about fellowship? And that's because I think it is fellowship that allows us to make sure we keep our spiritual life grounded in the everyday, grounded in the commonplace, grounded in the simple and the concrete and the daily experience of life. Here's what I mean. The Bible gives us a couple of commands. Hebrews 10:25 says this. It says very simply, let us not neglect our meeting together, as some people do, but encourage one another. And John 13:34 says this. This is one of Jesus' final comments to everybody. He says to his people before he dies. He says, so now I am giving you a new commandment, love each other. Nothing super, super complicated there. Basically, he says to his followers, guys, very, very important that you keep connecting, that you keep spending time together. And when you spend time together, love one another. That sounds so good, doesn't it? And one of the things that I appreciate about love, it's really easy to love like a group of people from up here on stage. Love gets complicated when you choose to love an individual person day in and day out for an extended amount of time from up close, right? That's when love is like a real complicated, whole special thing. But that's what fellowship is all about. Fellowship, very simply, is making sure we are in close proximity to one another. There's all sorts of things we'll hear, you'll hear us say, you'll hear us use the word community. You'll hear us say things like, we want to live life together. We really just mean we need to make sure that we are close enough to other Christians that we can annoy one another. That's the line. If you are not close enough in relationship to a bunch of other Christians that they periodically annoy you, you are not close enough. It's just the way it is. Why? Because it is in those moments that fellowship is profoundly, profoundly valuable. Profoundly valuable. People are so easy to love from far away, so much harder to live from up close. Because you know what you see when people are up close? You see all their quirks. You see all their weaknesses. Their brokenness comes out eventually. We all try to hide it as best we can. But you know, you hang out with somebody long enough, it's coming. It is, no doubt. For example, I am a generally forgiving person. Like, as a crowd, I could forgive you all day long. But so help me, if you make me 2 minutes late for the 27th time, I will lose it. I like to be on time. I will have been gracious the first time. I will have been gracious the second time. I will be gracious the fifth time. I might, if I'm having a good day, be gracious the 10th time. But there will come a moment where I will be having a complicated day, or I will really feel like I'm in a rush, and I will be very impatient because I hate being late. But you would never know that about me, and that would never come out in our relationship unless you are in close enough relationship with me to make me late 27 times. My poor children. I am a great listener in general. And I am happy to listen virtually all the time. But so help me when somebody takes 11 minutes to tell a 2-minute story. I just want to pull my hair out. Can you please get back to, like, when somebody doesn't know how to, like, I have worked hard to learn to tell a story since I was like 4 years old, right? I remember being in high school having like long conversations with my friends about how to be a good storyteller. We cared about this. I grew up in a very Italian family. We told stories incessantly. I love storytelling. And when somebody can't stay like on the thread of the story and they're like all over the place and I'm just like, how about I just make up the ending for you? I will jump in. I don't even care how it actually ends. I will land the plane for you. It's okay. And you can tell when this happens if you know me well enough, because I will like start doing relaxation exercises. 100% true. Like I will be like, caught myself doing this to somebody yesterday. I had to literally like change my posture. I had to change everything about the situation because if I didn't, I was going to like tear my hair out. But you know, you would never know that about me unless you told me a painfully long story for the 600th time. Because I can live with it a couple of times. It's fine. It's when we get into the close relationship, when we spend enough time with one another that the masks slip and that the faking, we run out of energy to fake it, that's when you see the real other person. And that right there, that moment, may be the single most profound opportunity you have to pursue spiritual health that you will have all week. All week. When I was a kid, I wanted my whole childhood and never got a rock tumbler. I don't know why I wanted one of these. I don't particularly want one now. But you guys know what a rock tumbler is? A rock tumbler is a round little jar-looking thing that sits on its side in this machine that shakes it. And you put sharp, sharp, sharp rocks into the tumbler, and they come out shiny and flat and smooth and pretty. Do you know why this is? They come out shiny and flat and smooth because all the sharp rocks bang into each other in the tumbler and get all of the sharp bits off each other. Does this make sense? Is anybody doing the math on where we're going here? I don't feel like this is too complicated. So what's amazing, though, is that in a rock tumbler, you have to put this gritty stuff in. And between the gritty stuff and the sharp rocks that are all in there, you put it on. You don't put the rock tumbler on for like 5 seconds. You put it on for like hours or something. I don't know because I never got one. But please don't go get me a rock tumbler. I really don't want one. But I don't. What I do know is it's a long time that you have the silly rock tumbler running, and over time, it smooths out the rocks, makes them far more treasures than they started off being. This is exactly what we can have happen in the midst of relationships. Fellowship is this profound opportunity that we have to knock off the little sharp edges from one another, to allow ourselves to be refined in our relationships. Profound opportunity, because the amazing thing is, you don't know where your sharpest edges are. Did you know that? That is 100% true for every single person in this room. What you think your greatest weakness is probably not it. What you think your greatest opportunity for growth is probably not it. Probably they are hidden by your blind spots. And it is only in the context of other people accidentally bringing out your weaknesses that you find out what they are and have the opportunity to do something about them. Which is really what the word encourage is all about in the Bible. The word encourage in the Bible isn't like, hey, you're a great person. The word encourage in the Bible always has to do with forward movement. For you, I guess it would be that way. Forward movement. Which is why that verse said, keep getting together and keep encouraging. Keep encouraging. It's the cheerleader. Hey, come on, keep going. Keep going. You got this. It's what happens. You know why you need encouragement when you get together with people? Because eventually it gets frustrating. And the frustration is the opportunity. And this is why so often when people come to church for the first time, one of the hardest challenges that they run into is getting into long-term relationships, being in those long-term relationships, and then staying in those long-term relationships. I don't mean dating relationships, by the way. I just mean friendships. The vast majority of the world has a really interesting model of relationship, which is, we're going to be really great friends for about a couple of weeks. Then when the mask slips a little bit and we offend each other, we're not going to talk anymore. And then we're not going to be friends anymore because we're going to take offense. That's the end of the story. Or we will pretend it never happened and start over again. Right? Like those are the two basic models. Either we're just not moving forward together or we're going back to square one together. But so seldom is the relationship model out in the world, hey, why don't we talk about it, deal with it, and grow through it together, whatever it is, whatever frustrated us, whatever hurt us, whatever wounded us, because you're gonna wound people, and people are going to wound you. That's just gonna happen. It's gonna happen, and this is why, by the way, sometimes people get nervous about being in a small group. They get nervous about being in a small group because small group is a vulnerable thing. There is the potential for being wounded. And I don't honestly want to find a way to promise that that won't happen. Because I think if we found a way to live in relationship where no wounding one another ever happened, we would miss out on one of the greatest opportunities relationship offers us, the opportunity to refine one another, the opportunity to allow ourselves to grow and be transformed in the areas of brokenness that would only come out in relationship. It's incredibly important in this context of when we think about Jesus's approach to spirituality. See how this, how much different this is. Is anybody with me, by the way, when I say that those moments when you are frustrated with a friend do not feel super spiritual? Right? Like, that doesn't feel like you're being an awesome Christian right now. And just to be clear, when we talk about fellowship, we are specifically talking in this context about relationship with other people who are trying to follow Jesus the same way you're trying to follow Jesus. Because the way you ultimately can solve those problems is to appeal to the one thing you both agree on, which is Jesus. Right? So I'm not saying you shouldn't ever be friends with non-Christians or whatever, but for tonight, what we're talking about is deep relationships with other believers that give you a safe context to let the real you come out, not just so that it can be affirmed. Boy, I loved this. Did everybody catch this? If you did not catch this on Sunday, Pastor Kurtz had this brilliant line that we accept, but we don't necessarily affirm, right? Did you catch that? Like, one another. I accept you exactly as you are. I want to be accepted exactly as I am. But that doesn't mean I want somebody to affirm my impatience with your storytelling. That would not help me. I don't want somebody to say to me, people say this all the time, they'll say, oh, you know what, Pastor Joshua, it's okay. To which 100% of the time my response is, no, it's not okay. It's just not. Now, I understand what you mean is either I'll get through it or I forgive you or whatever you mean, but you don't actually mean it's okay because it's not okay. Let's take it's okay off the table. Fellowship is this wonderful opportunity. So what can you do this week? Let's get really, really practical. Really, really practical with this idea of fellowship. I want to give you three suggestions that you can do this week to really dig into fellowship. Number one, you can start a relationship. Again, just to be clear, we are not talking about dating tonight. You can start a friendship. Ask somebody you don't know to spend time with them. Get to know them a little bit. Don't ask all of the personal questions the first time. Again, this is not like supposed to be intense and heavy because it's like the rock tumbler. It's not all about what happens in the one moment. It's really about what happens over the course of a long time. Just start getting to know somebody this week. Or number two, invest in a relationship this week. Spend some time with somebody this week that takes work. I don't mean they take work, though that's fine too. I mean spend some time with somebody in a way that takes work on your end, that you have to work on your schedule to make it happen, or you have to work on your priorities to make it happen. Start a relationship. Invest in a relationship. Number three, repair a relationship. Repair a relationship. So often, even as followers of Jesus, we leave relationships untended. We don't actually work towards healing them. Somebody in the church hurts our feelings. Someone in our small group offends us. Someone says something we didn't like. And we just stuff it. We just don't deal with it. We just pretend it never happened. We just keep moving as if it's not a big deal. And sometimes, let me be very clear, sometimes we are too quick to take offense. We need to forgive and move on. That is not stuffing it. That is forgiving and moving on. Sometimes there is some sort of brokenness in our life that we recognize we're getting stuck on something somebody else did, but it's really not their fault. Whatever they did brought up my insecurity. If that's the case, deal with it. Figure it out. Meet with a pastor. Meet with a therapist. You don't have to figure it all out today, but you have to be committed to keep moving forward so that you can figure it out, so that you can maintain that relationship. Don't let the relationship wither and die. What we're really talking about is the times when someone really did do something, legitimately did it. It is actually an offense. And you can't forgive them and move on, because it's not like, you know, they bumped into you and didn't notice or something. It's a real offense. And in that moment, you can repair the relationship. Go to the person and say, hey, can we talk about what happened? Go with humility. Go with grace. Go prepared to forgive. Go assuming that they have a side of the story that you may not know. This is always wildly important. If you're not sure how to have that conversation, ask your small group leader. Sit down with one of the pastors. One of the things people do with me all the time is they'll say, Pastor Joshua, I know I need to have this conversation with this person. I know I'm awful at that. So can we talk about it so that I can have the conversation I need to have? Sure, of course we can. That's a reasonable way of prepping for something hard. Let's do that. That's great. But whatever you need to do, again, three fellowship steps: start a relationship, invest in a relationship, repair a relationship. Challenge you to do one of those three things this week.